All right, I would love to start out this morning as we get into our message time with a little exercise. So let's go ahead. Let's all take a deep breath. Ready? Inhale. And let it out. I'm going to ask you guys to think very introspectively, and many of you are probably going to be tempted to think, well, it's just too early for that. Like, these questions are a little bit deeper than we want to get into at this time of day. And my response to you would be, you're absolutely right. This is probably a little bit prying for this hour of day. But nevertheless, let's jump right into this. Ready? Okay, I've got some questions for you. And this is not a pop quiz, by the way. This is not, there's no right or wrong answer. I just want us to be really honest with ourselves as we jump into this morning. And if you have the sermon notes that you may have grabbed on your way in, you're going to fill in some blanks, which will be helpful because you're probably going to want to look at it as we go forward. If not, just write it in your brain. That's fine. Ready? First question. What do you think about when you think about God? So what I mean by that is, like, if you were to close your eyes and imagine God, what would you imagine? Or if somebody were to come to you and ask you questions about God, maybe someone who's never experienced God before, never been to church before, like, what are some of the adjectives that you're going to use to describe God? Is he close to you? Is he far from you? Do you imagine, like, sky daddy God? I don't know. Like, who? What do you imagine when you think about God? Is he glowing? Is he on fire? I don't know. Like, what does God look like to you? What do you think about when you think about God? Is he a father to you? Is he far from you? Is he near to you? Write that down in the blank right there. We're going to continue on, but you could continue to think about it. You might be able to fill these other ones in very quickly. So the next one, what are some labels that you've accepted for yourself? So kind of like the first question, but what do you think about when you think about you? Like, when you look in the mirror, what do you see? What are some adjectives you would use to describe for yourself? Maybe some of us in the room, when we think about ourselves, we don't think just about us. We think about the people who count on us, right? So you might put down that you are the boss, or you might say you're a mom or a dad or a grandparent, right? These are some of the labels that we are okay with on our life. Maybe you are a student. Maybe you're an athlete. Go ahead. Write it down in the blank. Just what are some words to describe you? Ready? And the last one, what are some things that you would go out of your way to protect? Right? So these would reveal some of our values. So what are some things that if your house was on fire, like, what would you go in to save? Hopefully it's not your Pomeranian, okay? Like, maybe it is. I don't know. But for some of you who maybe wrote down that you're a parent, maybe it's your kids, right? Some of the things that I hope it's your kids, okay? Maybe it's not. I don't know. Maybe you trust them to jump out of the back window, whatever. But what are some things you would go out of your way to protect? Is it some stuff? Is it a family heirloom? Is it your money? Is it your financial security? What are some things that you value? I want you to go ahead and write that down in that blank. Now, here's why I want us to have that written right in front of us this morning as we get into our message, because it's going to reveal something about us. Here's why we did this. Ready? What we think about God, what we think about ourselves, and what we value the most typically determine where we go and what we're going to do when we get there. All right, so our understanding of God, our identity, and what we value have the power to determine where we go and what we will do when we get there. Right? Some of us, it might not be geographical, it might not be an actual location, but some of us have actually, our view of God, our view of ourselves, and what we value has actually moved us from one location to another. Maybe we've moved to be closer to our family, right? Maybe we've moved for a job. Maybe we've moved to be closer to our church. I know I've heard stories as we came out of the pandemic of people that were moving from out of state that picked Hernando County because they wanted to be close to CCW. Maybe your values, your understanding of God, all those things, maybe did actually move you from location to location. But here's what I know. It doesn't just determine that. It probably won't determine that as much as it will determine maybe not the location of our life, but maybe our quality of life. Maybe it determines where we are mentally. Maybe it determines our quality of life. Now, here's the really interesting part. Look at your answers to those questions again, because your answer to one or more of those questions matters in another way, and here's what it is. If you are ever asked to go somewhere that you do not want to go, or if you are ever asked to do something that you do not want to do, your answer to one or more of those questions will determine how you react. All right, if you've ever been asked to go somewhere or do something that's against your morals, that is in direct conflict with one or more of those things, in other words, it was against your understanding of God, it was just wasn't who you are, or it put your values at risk, right? You know what I'm talking about. You had to do something about it. If you've ever been asked to do something that was outside of your comfort zone in those areas, you reacted. It probably caused some pushback. At minimum, it created some kind of inner conflict within you, because what we know about God, our identity, and our values determine how we react in times of adversity. And last, if you've ever been forced to sit through it, like life throws you a curveball, something completely out of your control is happening and you have no choice. You weren't asked anymore. This is just your lot in life. You are where you thought you'd never be, and you are doing things that you never thought you would be doing, and it's completely out of your control. Come on, we've all been there, right? We get the news that we didn't think we would get. We're let go from a job, completely out of our control, and now we're forced to sit in it. Maybe a loved one gives up on us. Maybe your parents gave up on each other, right? Now you're forced to sit through the fallout. Maybe that job opportunity comes up that you just can't say no to, but you know you're gonna hate it, but the money's good, so you go for it, right? And now you're sitting through it because it pays the bills. Here's the last thing I want us to understand with this is our understanding of God, our identity, and what we value will either sustain us or destroy us in seasons of adversity, when we are forced to sit through it, right? Typically, our answer to those questions are what we look to for strength, or our lack of clarity in the answers to those questions might pull us apart in moments of adversity, when things are completely out of our control. Now, for the last several weeks, we've been going through this, the book of Daniel. Sorry, one second. Do you ever get that tickle and it's like your eyes start watering and you're trying to preach to hundreds of people? Man, it's the worst. All right, so. Anyway, we've been going through this series called Unshakable. We've been talking about the prophet Daniel. And we've seen how his view of God, his identity, and his values shaped his response in times of adversity. And it also sustained him through a very long season of captivity. So this morning, I want to take a look back with you guys. We're going to kind of sum all this stuff up. We're going to go all the way back to Daniel chapter 1. I'm gonna pull some pieces out as we go back through the book, because if you're anything like me, hopefully you kept up with this and you read through Daniel as we went, but right around Daniel 6, Daniel 7, like things start to get weird. And if you were like me, you're probably sitting at home reading through Daniel and you're like, I need an adult. Like things are getting strange. Like I'm not sure about this. Like I really hope. Yeah, like the end of the world didn't already happen and I missed it, right? Like this is kind of the feelings I'm having going through the second half of Daniel. So anyway, I just want to kind of go back. We're going to pop back to Daniel 1 and we're going to go from there and just pull out some things. And I want to answer the question of how, right? Like how did Daniel get through this captivity? How did he get through one of the most difficult seasons of his life? How did he have such an unshakable faith? And I think the answer is he said yes to some things that were really important. And he said no to some things that were also really important. It helped him have this unshakable faith and helped him be an unshakable person. And I hope that we can pull out of this how we can be unshakable people as well. And again, this is just a highlight through reel through the book of Daniel. So we're going to jump back to Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through 6. Now, ignore that says Daniel 6. Sorry, I didn't mean that. Daniel 1, 1 through 6. I'm going to put this here. I feel like I'm going to need it again. All right, so when you're in seasons of adversity, hydrate. All right. Daniel 1, starting in verse 1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim. So here's this dude, Jehoiakim. He's the king of Judah. He's in Jerusalem. He's where Daniel is. But then there's this guy, Nebuchadnezzar. All right, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. So Nebuchadnezzar shows up, destroys Jerusalem, takes some stuff from the temple, brings it back to the place where he keeps his stuff that's dedicated to his God. And he placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Verse 3, then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance, and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's place, palace, and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. So here we have our hero, Daniel, introduced into the story. He's with some other guys, but he's in a place that he never thought he would be. You have cough drops? I have cough drops.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool. I'll add them to my collection. Thank you. Sorry. So there we have Daniel. He's in a place he never thought he would be. And he's being asked to do things that he never thought he would be asked to do. And it's around the year 605 BC, and Nebuchadnezzar has absolutely decimated the city of Jerusalem. And here's the thing, if you were to go back and read some of the historical accounts of exactly what Nebuchadnezzar did to take Jerusalem, you would get some pretty gory details, and I'll give you just a little bit of it, because I think sometimes we reduce Daniel's story, or this moment in Daniel's life, to like a kidnapping. And like, that's bad enough as it is. But what Nebuchadnezzar actually did is he went to the city of Jerusalem and he surrounded the city with his men for over a year. Didn't allow any supplies to come in or to go out. He actually created a great famine in the city. They were starving. Some of the people of Jerusalem, there's accounts written that they turned to cannibalism to survive. And then, as if that's not bad enough, and then Nebuchadnezzar went in and burned down the city. And then he took Daniel. So, yeah, I think sometimes we just look at this and we go, okay, yeah, he destroyed the city, he took Daniel. It's so much worse than that. And here's Daniel sitting at the king's table, forced to sit with this man who just destroyed his city. The trauma that Daniel experienced from this king was far greater than we could imagine. Daniel would have seen friends and family suffering under the oppression of this guy. And he sits across the table from him around the age of 17. So this is like, if he were here today, like a junior in high school. Sits across the table from King Nebuchadnezzar. And now he's not only across the table from the guy that made his family go through, his friends and family go through unspeakable oppression and suffering. He's not only just there, he's dependent on him now to survive. And the king offers Daniel something to eat. And here's the thing, Daniel, I think, made a couple of decisions throughout his life, and decisions that we see through the book of Daniel that are really important, and decisions that we could make today. And the first one comes right here out of Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, where he says, Daniel resolved. He decided. He wasn't going to. That he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Now, the first question, or the first decision that Daniel makes here that really shaped his identity was this one. He says, I will not defile myself. And I have to ask, or I asked myself as I was reading this, what would have happened if Daniel had accepted the food from the king? And the answer is really probably nothing. Like, it's not that big a deal. It's a small thing. But this was against everything that Daniel believed. The kind of food that he was being offered was against his traditions. It wasn't how he was raised. It was against his beliefs in God. It was against his identity. It was against his values. So he said no to it. And I think in this moment, we see Daniel saying no to the small things, because later in life, he'll have the opportunity to say no to the big things. And this answer that he gives the king, or this decision that he makes, I think we see his conviction in that moment would carry him through the entirety of his life. 50 or 60 years later, we read about it in Daniel 6. There's some men. Daniel's been elevated in the kingdom. He's interpreting dreams for the king. And there's some men that would want nothing more than to have what Daniel has, to have the status that he has. So they start trying to find anything wrong with him that they can find. And in Daniel chapter 6, verse 4, in their words, they essentially say, we couldn't find anything wrong with him. And I think that they get to that conclusion because Daniel had made this decision not to defile himself. They couldn't find anything. They couldn't spread any rumors about him. So they had to make something up. They make this decree that for the next 30 days, they convince the king that nobody's allowed to make any petitions to any man or any god other than the king. And that's a problem with Daniel, because he had made the decision, his convictions had led him to pray three times a day. He would make petitions three times a day to God. And he had made the decision not to defile himself, not to compromise on his convictions. So he prays, he gets caught, and he gets thrown in the lion's den. And now, what we see here, though, is I think we're seeing Daniel able to make the right decisions at 70, because this is way further in his life. He's making the right decisions at 70 because of the decisions he made when he was 17, that I simply will not compromise my faith. I will not defile myself, even in the little things. And you might think, well, lion's den's pretty bad. Like, it's bad news. But God does a miracle in the lion's den. He shuts the mouths of those lions. And in Daniel 6:26, an even greater miracle happens, I think, when the king says, I make a decree that all my royal dominion, people are to tremble in fear before the God of Daniel. You see, the decisions that he made, even in the little things, eventually completely overturned a kingdom and exposed them to a new way of thinking, a way of thinking that was in line with Daniel's way, God's way. Daniel's conviction landed him in a place to see God move in a miraculous way, and his decision not to defile himself would ultimately change the religious landscape of Babylon. So, how about you? Have you made the conscious decision not to defile yourself? Or have you accepted the inherent danger in minimizing your sin? Or is it okay to bend the rules just a little bit? I have to ask the question for all of us, are our vices, right? The things that we just can't shake, that we just kind of go, well, it's just this little thing, right? But are our vices, are they undermining our ability to see God do something incredible in our lives? You see, Daniel had a choice to make. He could either blend in, or he could eat the food. He could stop praying if that's what he needed to do. He could probably hide better when he prays. I don't know. He could blend in. He could do that, or he could continue to stand out for his beliefs and stand up for his convictions. Have we missed out on a miracle because it's easier to blend into our surroundings, even though we know that our surroundings are leading us towards destruction? Right? This first decision, we will not defile ourselves. The second decision that Daniel makes, I think he had to have this decision in order to have the first one, but he says, I will not be afraid. He simply will not be afraid. Now, here's the thing. There's two moments in Daniel's life where we see him freaked out. All right, in Daniel chapter 7, verse 15, he talks about how his dreams were greatly disturbing. And I read his words in Daniel 7, 15, and he's like, this dream disturbed me. And I was like, Daniel, your dream disturbed me. Freaked me out too, man. I get it. And then in Daniel chapter 10, we find him trembling on the ground on the bank of the Tigris River. Daniel gets terribly afraid in two places, but anywhere else that we see him, his interactions with the king, right? He goes up to Nebuchadnezzar at one point and he says, hey, I had a dream. You're going to be a cow, bro. And he's like, I'm sorry. Who goes to the king and just says, you're a cow? Like, no, you just don't do that. But he did. He just boldly walked up. He's like, hey, listen, this dream, not good for you, man. That takes boldness, right? He wasn't afraid. When he goes into the lion's den, not afraid. He just goes, right? We see Daniel kind of like boldly just taking one step into the next, fearlessly, whatever comes next, right? But these two moments, they stand out in my mind because I got to ask, what was different? What had Daniel trembling in fear? And the answer is in both of those moments, Daniel was having an encounter with God. See, there's another moment in the Gospels, Matthew chapter 10. Jesus is meeting with his disciples, and he gives them instructions to go out into all these cities, and he says, hey, when you go, you know, don't bring anything with you. He says, when you go, tell people, you know, peace be with you, and if they don't accept you, just shake the dust off your sandals and keep going. Maybe you've heard this story before, but he says something to the disciples that's really important, because he also says, I'm sending you out like sheep to wolves. Right, this is going to be dangerous. But he says, do not fear. In Matthew 10, 28, do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him, and he's talking about God. Rather fear God who can destroy both soul and body. I think Daniel had that figured out already. I think Daniel just knew that he should fear God before he feared any man or anything. Proverbs 9:10 teaches us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I think Daniel got it right, and I think we can too, right? If you're going to be afraid that you're not living within God's design for your life. If you're going to worry about God's judgment. If you're going to be anxious that the good news isn't going to make it to lost people, right? Fear the things that are of God. We misplace our fear sometimes. We worry about fitting in. We worry about being liked. We fear not being able to make ends meet financially, right? We've got a lot of different things that we fear that are just not in line with what God has for us. One last passage I'll read. This comes out of 1 John 4. It says in verse 16, God is love, and whoever abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. And verse 18 says, there's no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. You know, God-shaped life doesn't really have room for fear, or no room for fear of people and things. There's so much more we could say about this. We're actually going to preach a little bit about it come into October. I'm really excited about that. But for now, I understand as well that there is a certain kind of fear that doesn't go away. We live in a time where clinical anxiety is on the rise, right? Like we struggle with this. And I want to point you guys to a couple resources. If that's you, if you have the kind of fear that feels like it just won't go away and you feel anxious, I don't have a slide for this, but I want to give you a couple. There's an author named Louis Giglio. He's lead pastor of a church up in Georgia, and he's written three books recently. One's called Don't Give the Enemy a Seat at Your Table. Another one is called Winning the War on Worry. And a third one, which I think is great, is called Putting an X Through Anxiety. If you put those on your notes, those are great books. If you feel like you just have the kind of fear that, like, it seems like it's not just fight or flight, but it's like it just won't go away. I'm an anxious person. I would implore you to check those out. So anyway, Daniel makes these decisions. He says, I won't defile myself. I won't be afraid. And then the last one is huge. I will not give up. Now, stick with me on this one because this is huge. The beginning of Daniel chapter 10, it says this, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a word was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar. Now here's the thing. Those first one, two, three, four, five-ish words, five words, in the third year of King Cyrus, that needs to be ringing in our heads, okay? In the third year of King Cyrus, a word was true and it was a great conflict. And he understood the word and had understanding of the vision. Now, this was just kind of what Daniel did. Daniel's just doing Daniel stuff. He's having dreams. God's talking to him. He's going to the king. He's telling the king what these visions and these dreams mean. He's there. He's just hanging out with King Cyrus. And it was normal for him. He had been elevated to this position within the kingdom. So he's there with King Cyrus in the third year of King Cyrus's rule. I'm not going to get into anything about what the dream meant, any of that stuff. What I'm more worried about is the third year of King Cyrus, because this era of the Bible is fascinating to me. And I read that, and I'm thinking through some of the things I learned in Bible college, some of the things I've read out of these books, because there's like these books like Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, 1st and 2nd Kings, a handful of Jeremiah, they all kind of go hand in hand. They're all happening very close to one another in time periods. And I flipped over to Ezra chapter 1, and something really important happens in Ezra chapter 1. Now remember, Daniel's with Cyrus in the third year of King Cyrus. In Ezra chapter 1, the first few verses, it says this. In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and also put it in writing. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. This is the important part. Whoever is among you of all his people, may his God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and rebuild the house of the Lord, the God of Israel. He is the God who's in Jerusalem. When did this happen? The first year of King Cyrus. In the first year of King Cyrus, he signs a decree that all the people who were taken into Babylon could now what? Go home. In Daniel chapter 9, we see Daniel praying. He's on his knees before God, and he's praying for his people, and he's praying for the city of Jerusalem, and he's praying that it would be restored. And the cool thing is, God does it. He answers Daniel's prayer. Chris talked about this last week. We see Daniel on his knees. He's praying for it to be restored. God does it. He sets up Ezra to take the people out of Babylon back to Jerusalem. The next page, there's Daniel still in Babylon. Like, I read this and I'm like, are you kidding me? At least 3 years into the reign of King Cyrus, Daniel is still in Babylon by choice at this point. Teaches us something extremely important about Daniel. He stayed in Babylon at least 3 more years. A lot of people believe he stayed there at least 10 more years. And Ezra, it mentions that him in Jerusalem at some point, he might have just been visiting. But a lot of people believe that he made his home in Babylon in his old age and actually died in Babylon. I sit back and I have to ask the question, man, what is Daniel thinking? after everything they put him through, after everything they put him through, after the unspeakable things that happened to his family, they tried to kill him. They tried to compromise his faith. They did all these things. What is Daniel thinking? I think Daniel knew something that we need to know. It's this. The presence of godly men in godless places is greater than thousands of God's people getting comfortable. The presence of godly men in godly places is greater than thousands of God's people getting comfortable. How could he leave? Right? Daniel had watched God be praised by pagan king after pagan king. Nebuchadnezzar, Darius, and now Cyrus all gave favor to Daniel's God, our God. As a result of Daniel just simply being present, not willing to defile himself, being bold, fearless, and just doing the next right thing. By refusing to be afraid, by refusing to be defiled, Daniel just continued to take faithful step after faithful step. And he watched kings praise God and sign decrees that their people would worship our God. Daniel's unshakable faith helped him endure hardships and won over the favor of entire kingdoms. How could he go back to Jerusalem? How could he get comfortable? I think Daniel stayed in Babylon because he knew the importance of not giving up on where God has placed you. He knew that he had been placed in Babylon for a reason. And so when given the chance to go, he stayed. So I have to ask the question of us today, what would it look like if you and I started looking at our placement in life as God's divine assignment? Like, what if he has you here for a reason? Like, what if we stop viewing our circumstances as an interruption to our story, but rather an opportunity to be met by the powerful presence of God in an unfamiliar and difficult place? You know, I don't know what you've faced that has you tempted to give up, but what if you didn't give up? Right? Like, what if you decided not to give up on your neighbors that need Jesus? Right? Like, I know, like, I get it. Like, they mow the yard and that, like, the blower thing blows the grass and dirt like straight through your fence into your yard, and then you got to blow it back into their yard, right? I get it. That's annoying. I know that, like, their dog barks late at night, the baby's trying to sleep, right? Like, I know that for some reason, like, you live in the middle of Spring Hill, and somehow this dude's got a rooster in his backyard, right? Like, I get it. That's frustrating. I would want to move too, right? But what if we didn't? What if we didn't give up on our neighbors that need to know the hope of Jesus? You know, maybe your job is hard, and maybe your job is extremely difficult, and maybe it's the only place you go where you're not surrounded by Christians, and you're tempted to go and just, you know, get your work done and come home. You know, what if instead of going in with our head down and just, you know, being frustrated, maybe we put our Beats headphones on so we don't have to hear Steve clip his toenails, right? Like, what if, like, we went in with our eyes open and just saw people the way God sees them and decided not to give up on them? And what if we just decided to work hard? And what if, while we set the example of what hard work looks like, and our bosses ask us, you know, why do you work so hard? You can say, well, the Bible teaches me to work as if I'm serving the Lord, which is the best job in the world. So wherever I am is the best job in the world. You know, what if you decided not to give up on your spouse? You know, what if, they did that thing. Maybe they're not who you thought they'd be. Maybe this isn't living up to the relationship you thought it would be. But what if you showed them what grace looks like? Do you have other people in your life that need to know what grace looks like? Do you have people who've never experienced the grace of God? that you can show them the grace of God. You know, here's one. What if you decided not to give up on your church? Like, I'm not just saying CCW. I've got a lot of friends in ministry, and they talk about this, like how coming out of the pandemic, we're just really, like, really emotional, right? What if instead of being frustrated and wanting to give up, what if we decided to serve? What if we decided to lean in a little bit and gain understanding and gain a heart of service within our church? Because here's what I know, and this isn't just true of CCW, but the church needs good people who refuse to give up on it. Yes. And what if, here's one, what if you started viewing those appointments with the oncologist as an opportunity to show them the hope of Jesus that's in you? You know, I mean, I could go on and on. We all have our Babylon, right? We all have that place where we've ended up where we never thought we'd be. You know, Daniel didn't give up in Babylon. In fact, the only thing Daniel ever did give up was control. And here's what we learned from Daniel. You know, there's some lines that we can draw in the sand, right? There's some decisions that'll greatly impact how we endure our way through Babylon. It might even impact who we influence in Babylon, and it might even help us thrive in Babylon. These decisions that Daniel makes, I will not defile myself. I will live a life of conviction, and I will not compromise. I will not be afraid. There's nothing stronger than our God. People and things are not the boss of me, and they don't scare me. I'll not give up on God's assignment for my life. God has me here for a reason, and I'm willing to lean into what that reason might be. Now, just to wrap up some of this, I think that Daniel said no to some really important things, but he also said yes to some things that didn't just help him endure Babylon, but helped him maybe even enjoy it a little bit, and maybe it enriched his time in Babylon. So I want to throw three things at you that Daniel said yes to. Right, the first one is Daniel said yes to telling the uncomfortable truth. Right, like he would have these dreams, he would have these visions, and he would go to these kings, and he would just tell them what he saw. Daniel did it a lot, and it always worked out for him. And I think people appreciated his honesty. He didn't just tell them, he didn't lie to them to make them feel better. He told them the uncomfortable truth. So I think it's important for us to be honest with people. The second one, Daniel said yes to friendships with like-minded people. And we see it right off the bat. He's aligned himself with three other people, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that believed what he believed, that were willing to sit with him through the difficult times. They sat with him at the king's table. They aligned their diets with one another, right? It matters to have people that believe what you believe. Having people by your side that are willing to go along with you matters. Put some friends on your faith. Have some people there. And the last one is Daniel said yes to a disciplined faith. We saw it in Daniel 6. He had three times a day that he had scheduled. He was going to pray in his room facing Jerusalem, and nothing was going to get in the way of that. He had three times that he had set aside. Now, here's the thing. Faith, a solid faith, an unshakable faith, like it doesn't happen on accident. Right? You're not just going to trip and fall into prayer times with God, right? Set aside some time. Like start setting some alarms on your phone if you need to. Maybe even just like maybe get up 15 minutes earlier to spend time in scripture, to pray, enjoy the sunrise every once in a while. Just spend time with God. Set some alarms for that. Set an alarm in the middle of the day to just spend time with God, to pray. Hey, God, am I still living within your will today? Am I doing what you've asked me to do? Set those alarms, whatever it might be. Maybe even set a reminder on your calendar, like once a month, to shut off all the devices in the house. Get in scripture a little bit more, pray a little bit more, live your life with your eyes open and up, right? That might be what that looks like for you. But Daniel said yes to a disciplined faith, and none of it happened on accident. And, you know, we read through Daniel's story, and I don't know if you can just feel it. It's like this unshakable nature that he had. It came with the ability to say no to the things that you need to say no to, and yes to the things that would enrich and sustain him through the hardest moments of his life. And we can be unshakable people too, right, when we follow his example. I'd like to end our time with you guys today. I want to read a passage that comes out of 1 Peter chapter 5. And this happened like 600 years after Daniel, but these words were still true to Peter 600 years later, and they're still true to us today. And I think they maybe offer us a little bit of encouragement. This is 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 6 through 10. He says this: "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he might exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you." Right? We're not going to be afraid. We're going to give that stuff to God. We're going to give him our fears, our worries, our anxieties, and give it up to him because he cares for us. "Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion." I read this, I wonder, you know, was Peter thinking about Daniel when he's writing these words? He talks about how the devil prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. "Resist him, firm in your faith." And that's that we will not defile ourselves, right? We're gonna resist the devil, we're gonna flee from temptation, we're gonna flee from sin, knowing that the same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world, right? Everyone's going through something. We're all going through some kind of Babylon. We're all in places that we never thought we'd be. "And after you've suffered a little while," right? Like after you refuse to give up, "the God of all grace, who has called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you." I think we'll be unshakable people. Let me pray. God, we love you. I thank you for your word. I thank you that it stands true some 2,600 years later. Thank you for your servant Daniel, who is willing to set such a great example for us, that through his hardship, through his suffering, we can compare our lives to his, and we can say, you know what, I want to be like that. I want to make sure that I don't fall into temptation and defile myself. I want to make sure that I'm not afraid, and I want to make sure that I don't give up. I want to be like Daniel someday. I want to say yes to the right things and no to the right things. God, I just pray that you would stir in the hearts of your people today, that we'd go out of here and that we'd be unshakable. It's in your son's name that we pray. And everybody said, amen. Amen.